Frank Morgan drifted into Denver and checked into a hotel, signing the register F. Morgan. The desk clerk never so much as raised an eyebrow. Frank had dropped out of sight after leaving Crossing. The town's boom would bust. Crossing would fade into oblivion. But Denver boomed and continued to grow. Frank gave himself a bath, haircut, shave, and bought some new clothes, including a new hip-length jacket. The nights were turning colder as late fall began settling over the high country. Frank found a small cafe and ordered coffee as he looked over the sparse offerings on the menu, finally waving the tired-looking waitress over and ordering the special.
It ain't nothing special, but it'll fill you up.
That's what I need, ma'am. I'm sure tired of eating my own cooking.
Been on the trail long?
Long enough to know that it took two fills in the bathhouse to get the fleas off me.
I'll get your food right out to you.
Thanks.
Frank sipped his coffee while waiting for his food. His weeks on the Lonesome were quiet. No trouble, just the way he liked it. But no trouble for Frank Morgan was about to end. He had a lead on the newly formed gangs of Ned Pine and Victor Van Bergen. The people he talked with didn't paint a pretty picture. Ned, Vic, and their gangs raided all over the West during their careers spanning 8 to 10 years, but mostly in a three-state area, Colorado, Wyoming, and Montana. They were the last of the big outlaw gangs still working the wild, woolly, and full of fleas West as civilization slowly tightened its grip. They were also cold-blooded killers. Their fatal mistake was killing the only woman Frank ever loved, Vivian Browning. It got back to Frank. The gang members all boasted and laughed about the killing of Vivian as if it were a big joke. Whenever Frank let the thought cross his mind, it filled him with a terrible, deadly coldness. When he finished with the gang, none would be left alive to laugh at anything else. The waitress placed his food in front of him, refilled his coffee cup, and left him alone. Frank dug in. The food was not fancy, but it was good and filling, and the bread was fresh baked and hot. He cleaned his plate and waved at the waitress for more coffee. Then he rolled a cigarette and sat for a time, staring out the window at the goings-on in the busy street and on the boardwalk. Denver was a fast-growing city, too damn big for Frank's liking. Too many laws and rules. Why, a man couldn't even tote a gun around in Denver. Not legally, anyway. But regardless of what the law stated, Frank carried a short-barreled .45 and a shoulder rig hidden under his coat. He suspected he was not alone in carrying a concealed weapon. Frank finished his coffee, left a tip on the table for the pleasant and very attentive waitress, paid his bill at the counter, and exited the cafe. The cold wind warned that winter was just around the corner. Frank stood for a time on the boardwalk, senses alert, checking things out before he started walking. Frank Morgan, a man the press recently named the Drifter, was one of the few known fast guns still alive in the West. There were others, certainly. Smoke Jensen, Lewis Longmont. But that was about it. All the rest were dead or retired. Other young guns were just as fast or faster, and Frank had to watch for them. They fancied themselves gunslingers, hunting names of their own. They were ruthless and persistent in hunting down and bracing the few really fast guns still alive. Frank Morgan was a shade over 6 feet tall. He was broad-shouldered and lean-hipped, a very muscular man. He was in his mid-40s and carried the title of gunfighter ever since he was 15 years old and forced into a gunfight with an older man down in Texas. Frank killed the man, and several years later was forced into a wild gunfight with the man's brothers. Frank killed them all. His reputation as a gunfighter was set in stone that day. That was many years and many, many gunfights ago. Frank didn't start a single one of the fights, but he finished them all.
It all could have ended right here, so many years ago. If only...
He married here in Denver, a lovely girl named Vivian. But her father, a wealthy man, hated Frank and framed him for a crime he didn't commit. He agreed not to pursue it, and Frank would leave and never see Vivian again. Frank, with no choice, pulled out and didn't see or hear from Vivian for years. Her father had the marriage annulled. Vivian remarried and soon had a son. She eventually took over her father's many businesses after his death, becoming one of the wealthiest women in America. She'd also become a widow. And only a few months ago, Frank had learned that Vivian's son, a young man named Conrad, was fathered by him. It came as quite a shock. A few months back, Frank had drifted into a mining town in northern New Mexico and discovered Vivian there, overseeing a huge mining operation. A few short weeks later, just as Frank and Vivian began to pick up the pieces of their broken past, Vivian was dead, killed by the Pine and Van Bergen gangs.
They will pay, Viv. It takes me the rest of my life. Pine and Van Bergen will pay.
He walked slowly back to his hotel. In the lobby, Frank paused to buy a newspaper before going to his room. Several months without a newspaper left him hungry for news. This paper was endorsing Benjamin Harrison for president. The election was in a few weeks. Frank didn't think he would vote. He wasn't at all sure he could vote, since he didn't have a permanent address, though he didn't think that made much difference. A great many politicians stressed the theme, vote early and often. There was something called the Scott Act concerning Chinese laborers in America. Frank wasn't sure what all that was about either. Harrison said if elected president, he would open that part of Indian territory known as Oklahoma for settlement, and United States land laws would be in force. Frank folded the newspaper and laid it aside. No mention of the Pine and Van Bergen gangs. One news item did catch his attention. A gold strike in an area west and slightly north of Denver. A big gold strike. Frank decided to ride that way in a couple of days and check it out. He glanced out the window facing the street. Frank always enjoyed sleeping in a real bed when it rained. It was several months since he'd slept in one, with a roof over his head. Frank made sure the door was securely locked, as secure as it could be with a skeleton key, and just to be extra safe, he wedged a chair under the doorknob. Frank tugged off his boots and placed them by the bed. He stretched out, head on the pillow, and closed his eyes. It was not yet cold enough to build a fire in the small stove, but with the unpredictability of the high country weather this time of the year, it might be later on in the night. The rain did not lull Frank into a peaceful, dreamless sleep. His sleep brought a jumble of unpleasant dreams. He dreamt of many of the men who faced his gun and died for their folly. There was that kid in Kansas, in that little no-name town right after the war. Billy something or another, about 18 or so. Frank tried to warn the kid off, did his best to walk away from him, but Billy insisted, forcing his hand. Billy died on the dirty floor of the saloon that night. He didn't even clear leather before Frank's bullet tore into his heart. Frank turned away, mounted up, and rode out of town. Then, the dream about the father and his sons came to haunt him again. Frank stopped off in a small blot on the map in the panhandle of Texas for supplies. There was a liquored-up young man in the general store come trading post come saloon. The young man, bad-mouthed and evil-tempered, braced Frank. Frank tried to ignore him, but the punk kept pushing and pushing. He finally put hands on Frank. Frank didn't like people to put hands on him. He flattened the young man with a big, hard right fist, leaving him addled on the floor, or so he thought.
I'll kill you!
Frank turned, his .45 leaping into his hand. The young man's father and his other two sons caught up with Frank on the trail about a week later. The father and his sons didn't believe in much conversation. They opened fire on Frank as soon as they got within range. Frank found cover, and an all-day battle ensued. The father and one of his sons were killed, the remaining son badly wounded. Frank patched up the wounded man as best he could, buried the other two, and pulled out. There was nothing else he could do. He dreamed of the time he found a family butchered by Indians. Frank was prowling through the ruins of the cabin when a small posse from a nearby town rode up. In their rage, they thought Frank committed the atrocity. That was a very ugly scene, involving a hanging rope. Until Frank filled both hands with Colts and made a believer out of the sheriff and what remained of his posse after the very sudden, explosive, and bloody shootout. Frank carefully avoided the northwestern part of Arizona for several years after that. Frank fought himself out of sleep and the exhausting dreams and sat on the edge of the bed for a moment, gathering his thoughts. He hated how those dreams entered his sleep. He often wondered just what they meant, if they meant anything at all.